Twin teenage brothers Daryl and Kanga try their best to navigate the perils of high school in their small Michigan town during the 1990s. Girls, bullies, jealousy, basketball team tryouts. But there's one big complicating factor. Daryl and Kanga have a secret. They're robots. And if any of their human classmates or teachers find out, they could be deemed obsolete and permanently shut down. That's the premise of Simeon Mills' new novel, The Obsoletes. Mills is a graphic artist, writer, and middle school teacher here in Spokane. He holds degrees from Columbia University and the University of Montana's MFA in creative writing. And The Obsoletes is his first novel. Simeon Mills, thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks for having me. This is great.
So this book took you a long time. It's a long time in the making. I read in the acknowledgments that you said it took you 18 years to finish. So take me back to the beginning and tell me what got you first interested in writing about robot teenagers.
Well, they weren't robots at first. That came along a little bit later. This was my first attempt to write a novel. I had just gotten done with college, and I'd done some creative writing classes, written short stories, so I wanted to see if I could write like a full-length novel. So there weren't even brothers at that point. It was just about a kid. There was still basketball. There were still some of the other characters in the book, and I wrote maybe 100 pages, and then I realized it wasn't really a novel and put it in a drawer for probably about 7 more years. And in the meantime, I went to the University of Montana, studied creative writing there, and decided to pick it up again. And I realized it needed more tension. So I split my main character into two, and they became brothers. And that worked for a full novel for a little while, but it wasn't until I did another draft of it when I decided to make them robots that they really just came alive. And then I was absolutely intrigued by the story. The characters' voices became really their own. The circumstances of being robots presented so many different complications to their otherwise pretty normal lives. So it was a really great balance of having what to me were pretty familiar teenage experiences, but with this added element of danger and hidden identity in the fact that they were robots.
Well, my guest is Simeon Mills, author of The Obsoletes. So this is probably a good time to pause and have you read something from it, get
sure.
a sense of the sound of the book.
Okay, in this section of the novel, Kanga has already become a basketball player and he needs to get clothes for his first basketball game. One of the only stores the boys go to regularly is the Salvation Army. So they are going there to get clothes for Kanga's basketball game. After the initial practice, Kanga survived the remaining November workouts, earning a well-deserved Thanksgiving break to prepare himself for the Birds' first game of the season on December 2nd. Now it was Kanga's wardrobe, rather than his skills, that needed the most attention. Mr. Belt required his players to appear gussied up at school on game day. Dapper, spruced, or swank were also acceptable states of dress. What they all had in common was a button-down shirt, tie, slacks, and shiny shoes. Kanga owned none of the above. We headed to the Salvation Army. 1991 was allergic to nostalgia. Watch 5 minutes of TV, and you understood that people didn't sit long enough to reminisce about the days gone by. They were too busy dancing uncontrollably, jumping from airplanes with snowboards attached to their feet, racing cars around enormous beer bottles, or splashing into vast bodies of water. Zippers on the flies of jeans were not strong enough for today's hustle and bustle, so flies now included buttons. The definition of sports had to be rewritten to include cross-training, which meant being proficient at all sports at once. This required a special shoe, a cross-trainer, but rollerblades were also acceptable if you wanted to go faster than your opponents. The Salvation Army had none of the appropriate gear for 1991. Luckily for us, men's dress clothes had remained consistent since approximately the beginning of time. The smell hits you first upon entering the store, like a bunch of sunburned humans packed into a closet. Then, the organization. I often wondered if the Salvation Army had its own set of directions for how to place everything just so on the shelves. To me, it required a certain nerve to place a used commode, for instance, next to a used stepladder. as if those two items shared an intrinsic bond that could never be broken. Confidence and honesty, that's what I thought about when I thought about the Salvation Army. Kanga bounded immediately to the sporting goods section, just like he'd always run to the toys section when we were little kids. I borrowed Mom's strategy of finding an armful of potential fits for him, carrying them to his location, and draping them across my brother's body while he perused the Salvation Army's eclectic treasures. I stacked his keepers in a pile: black shoes, two black pairs of socks, navy pants, charcoal pants, two white shirts, three clip-on ties. Then I searched for my own game day clothes, swallowing my pride and entering the boys' section. It was a humiliating endeavor, but soon my arms were bulging with shirts and slacks, and I was waiting in line for the fitting rooms. The Salvation Army had three fitting rooms, but one was special: the middle room. That was the place, back in fourth grade, my life changed forever.
That was my guest Simeon Mills reading from his new novel, The Obsoletes, and he will also be reading from it May 22nd at Auntie's Bookstore. So the book is a really interesting mix between realism and science fiction and also this sort of alternate history. So it takes place in Michigan in the 1990s, which I understand is where you grew up as well.
Yes.
So there's real historical events like Magic Johnson's announcement that he had HIV in 1991, but also sort of fictional historical events like a Chinese basketball-playing robot.
Correct, yeah.
Yeah, so tell me about creating that sort of blended, alternate science fictional history of the 1990s in America.
Sure. Yeah, well, it was pretty fun to go back and to take what I remembered from the early 90s when I was a teenager myself. And the Magic HIV announcement was one of those big events where, definitely in Michigan, you kind of remember where you were when you heard about that, because he's a local hero in the Lansing area where I'm from. And that, to me, was a big part of the reason why it takes place in that time period, because here was someone who was a hero to so many of us, whether you were into basketball or not. He was just this larger-than-life personality, and just seemingly all at once, his identity had changed, and the way people were talking about him changed. Like, it was essentially a death sentence then. People didn't want to play basketball against him. Nobody really knew what was going to happen. And we know now that's a part of Magic's identity, but he's gone on to do so many other things. So having that moment kind of be a focal point for my characters, you know, their hero, I think was pretty important to see that he didn't necessarily let this element define his life, and really the way he approached it kind of did define who he was, how he, you know, really promoted acceptance of people with HIV and that sort of thing. But in terms of the more fictionalized elements, definitely the idea that China is the world leader in creating robots and acceptance of robots, which is something that the boys are desperately wanting in the United States where they're growing up and not necessarily getting. They have to hide their identities and all that. I think for a lot of Americans in the 90s and probably to this day, China was kind of a large, mysterious country, in a lot of ways on par with the United States, but having a different worldview that was a little bit more secret that we didn't quite understand. So it seemed like a perfect opportunity to have them be this kind of alternate haven almost for robots, where their parts were made, where they were celebrated, where robots could play basketball for the Olympic team. And it was somewhere far away that the boys certainly wouldn't have access to, but a kind of thing for them to dream about, that they could someday achieve the things that the robots in China achieved.
So a lot of the story, like you alluded to with Magic Johnson, is about acceptance and secrets and having a part of your identity that you're not sure the world will accept. So I don't want to risk making the metaphor too obvious, but do you see the story as a metaphor for a certain type of identity, or just broader, the versions of ourselves that we're not ready to share with the world?
I think the last way you put that's really nice. I didn't have a particular identity or group of people in mind that robots would be an allegory for. Mm-hmm. You know, I think I had to do a lot of imagining, a lot of sort of empathizing with a fictional situation that is pretty particular, having a family where you all have to hide an identity, not necessarily being sure about your creators and where you come from. But I think the sort of xenophobia and the hatred they experience, the assumptions people make about them, the comments they have to endure and not be able to react to, I think those are a lot of really common experiences that a lot of people definitely will relate to and go through. So I am very much open to readers bringing to the book and reading into the book whatever they take from it. I'd love to hear the connections that they make.
A lot of the book, like you said, is also just sort of coming of age high school drama. So there's mm-hmm. love interests and there's bullies and there's jealousy between the two brothers. A lot of the drama takes place in a high school environment.
Right.
And you're a middle school teacher.
Right.
So yeah. Has your experience with real life students helped shape any of the characters or anecdotes in the book?
I
you don't have to name any specifics.
I haven't based any of the characters on any like specific students. But I would say being around teenagers all day, hearing the way they talk, the way their mind works, the way, you know, how they can't sit still. We had our state testing today, and there were some students that would sit down for a couple minutes and then they'd have to stand up and just sort of move around. And I felt sorry for them because I know they're not doing that to break the rules of state testing, but it's just the way their bodies are working right now. So being in that environment where the life of a teenager is just so on display really helps me kind of get into that world myself. And it helps me kind of be a better spectator in the world that I'm creating, and when I'm in there moving the pieces around to have it be, I hope, a little more authentic.
My guest has been Simeon Mills, who is the author of The Obsoletes. It is a new novel, his first. He's also reading May 22nd at Auntie's Bookstore and has tour dates throughout the West. Thank you so much for joining me.
Thanks, Chris.